Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Microsoft Spotlight podcast with me, Andrew Price, and my co-host, John Jarvis. This episode is proudly sponsored by BitTitan. Check out their website today to find out more information about BitTitan and how it can help you migrate your data to the Microsoft cloud. So John, we'd like to introduce our first guest today.
Yeah, so we're super excited to welcome our first guest to the podcast, Zoe Wilson, who works for a partner based in the UK. And without further ado, hello, Zoe.
Hi, John. Hi, Andrew. First of all, I just want to say thanks so much for having me on today. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with both of you. So my name's Zoe. Like you said, I work for a UK partner called Agilisys, and I work in our Modern Work business unit as the head of enterprise collaboration and productivity. And what that means is that I'm responsible for working with a lot of our customers on the strategy for what they do with Microsoft 365, what they do once they've moved to the platform, what the art of the possible is, and really driving that kind of productivity and new ways of working as well. And I get really excited talking about this. So I do quite a lot of this outside work as well at community events and coaching friends and family and all kinds of stuff like that.
So that's very much like myself and John. You know, we are really much in the same space as you. So we're all about talking to customers, the art of the possible, how we can basically get them from their legacy on-prem stuff up into the Microsoft cloud. So with your career at your current company, you also told us about the steering committee that you're working for towards the Women in Empowerment Network. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how that works within your space?
Yeah, certainly. So working for a tech company, there aren't a lot of women, despite our best efforts, I think. I've been there nearly 4 years now. And when I joined, it was in the first few months after I joined, we set up the Women's Empowerment Committee. And the view was that we needed to do something proactive, both to help support the women that we've got within our organisation and also look at what we could do to both bring more women into tech roles and show women out in the industry that actually coming to work for us is a really great place to come and work as a woman, you know, where you can be successful and there are things in place. So we've done quite a number of things. We've worked with some of the schools in the boroughs where our customers are based. We've done work shadowing events. We do lots of stuff for International Women's Day. But we also do things like support with policy reviews. We look at the wording of our job adverts to make sure that the language that's being used isn't excluding women, for example, as well. So it's been really great to be involved in that. And I think we've made a lot of progress, but there's still a lot more to do.
Yeah, it sounds very much like some of the stuff that you do in one of my previous organisations that I work for. They did a lot of work within the women in tech community to try and get more women from a graduate level into IT. And as I say, me and John spoke on the episode one where basically both within our teams, there is like no females within our organisation. I mean, obviously we have female leaders. So obviously the head of my division is Carla Hall. She's, you know, the head of Northwestern Europe in Fujitsu.
And I know and John, also, one of the vice presidents at CDW UK, Grace Mee, she's obviously female as well. So yeah, there's a lot of great people to kind of have as as role models within the industry. But it's kind of, I think, for me personally, that the lack of CV. I spoke to you last week, Zoe, and I said to you that I think I'd done 22, 23 interviews last year, and I didn't see one CV come through my email from a female candidate, which was a bit concerning. Hopefully something that we can help drive with these podcasts and speaking to people such as yourself.
Yeah, I think it's a real worry for me because I interview for people at all levels, from graduate all the way through to kind of architect level. And the amount of women working in this space, you know, you do see some people out in the community, but actually in the candidate pool, you know, in the number of people who are coming to apply for jobs, it's just so low. And I don't think this is something that we're going to fix for my generation. But I think what we, you know, things like this podcast and some of the great work that people are starting to do is really important, because that will hopefully fix it longer term. So, you know, in 5-10 years, I'd hope that we're not still having that that same conversation. And I think, Andrew, the comment that you made about, you know, getting people at graduate age is great, but actually the problem starts before that. You know, I've talked to girls who are in like sixth form, so 16, 17 year olds, who, and this is as recently as the International Women's Day last year, where they've shared with me that IT and computing is still seen as a boys' subject and not something that girls would strive to go for at school. So in my view, we need to get, it starts before graduation. We need to get them when they're younger, and we need to do a better job of marketing how great it can be working with these technologies.
I'd say probably from an age perspective, you know, when I was basically growing up, yes, it was very much a boys' topic. But I say with the growth of, say, Microsoft Teams, for example, I know my daughter now, she's been doing a schoolwork through Microsoft Teams, and she's been learning how to use Teams in that way. So, you know, back when we was at school, you wouldn't get that kind of opportunity. I think because of the pandemic, it's enabled a new way of life, a new way of working, which is then introducing technology to children at a younger age, which, you know, we didn't have that. I mean, we didn't have Office 365. We couldn't access our school email from outside. I mean, I didn't have an email address at school. So, you know, basically getting an email address and a Teams account and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's not normal for what we was experiencing.
I was at secondary school, started in 98 now, so actually you can work out how old I am. But back then, I think our IT class, I think the boys used to do like the IT class, girls used to go off and do another class. It was kind of, and there was such a gender split there. So I don't know what it's like in schools nowadays, or hopefully it's changed and people just do what they want to do and it doesn't. But yeah, I can kind of see where you're coming from there.
I say I started as an IT apprentice. I mean, I went to college. There was literally one female within the actual college class. I didn't do very well at college. I literally ended up dropping out of it. I actually went to do an IT course at college, and it was probably the worst course I've ever done in my life, especially when you know a little bit more about certain parts of IT than the actual teacher. So it's like, yeah, this is not for me. So I ended up going to an apprentice company. And again, it was all lads within the group. There was girls there, but they were basically doing like the business marketing kind of course from the apprenticeship. But then as I've basically grown through my IT career, you know, I haven't worked with many females within the community, but within the IT community. You get like the odd people that say, I do like the service desk roles, which, you know, I know quite a few females have basically gone from like an operations role into doing a few bit of service desk. And then I've known a few now that actually gone a little bit, you know, big and beyond that, but you just don't get that kind of, you know, people from the market space and look at Microsoft technologies. I mean, when I look at the women in tech community and look at, you know, the list of speakers and list of areas that basically come from, it's all from like a developer background. So I know, Zoe, for yourself, you come from like the SharePoint world. You do get a lot of women within that particular space that basically then grow within Office 365. Now, obviously, Microsoft Teams being a bigger thing. And obviously, I'll come on to that on my next point in a second about Teams. But you always get women from a development background, more into technology, but not from the Microsoft architect element. So doing the work that, you know, we do on this course, so, you know, M365. And so I know there's a lot more out there now where basically there's more spot, as I say, the pun of the podcast, there's a spotlight more on the women in tech community now, where basically you see more and more things basically being set up. So I know obviously the Microsoft Teams women in tech community, I know, which obviously Zoe, you'll know a part of. You want to tell us a little bit about that and basically how that come about?
Yeah, so far we've only had the very first of the community meetings, which was in February. The next one will be this week. I think it's on the 9th. And it's really interesting because it's a global community. So there's lots of people joining from around the world. And I think this came about from a conversation that Mareth Stave, a Norwegian MVP, had with Laurie Potmeyer. Just to look at how we can replicate some of the great women in SharePoint community, or, you know, the other kind of Microsoft community specifically for women. And it's really interesting for me just seeing the talented women that we've got globally, but still actually not a huge amount of people. And I'm hoping that as we get kind of a rhythm going over the next few months, we can actually really start to shout about how great it is to come and work with these technologies and how interesting and varied and rewarding a career it can be. So for me, it feels like it's going to be a really great platform to try and help help with that marketing problem, because I don't think we market the jobs that we do very well to a diverse range of people.
Just stripping back a little bit, kind of like what got you kind of interested in working in the sector that you currently in? Like, what did the younger Zoe kind of what attracted her to the industry, and what made her want to start this career?
So I've always been interested in technology, and actually it wasn't really something that I studied, because I always picked up computers really, really easily. I remember being at primary school and showing my teachers how to use the BBC computer that we had, for example. and my first computer at home was a ZX Spectrum, which probably gives you an indication about how old I am. I've always loved tech. I've always loved computers and how it opens the world up to you. And I wanted to join the army originally as an officer in the Royal Signals. Again, that's very much about technology. And I love the fact that in the army, they'd get to play with all of these gadgets that hadn't made it into kind of the general market yet, and electronic warfare and all of that stuff. And then I luckily, around the time that 9/11 happened, I found out I had asthma, so I didn't qualify. I was really glad, because I didn't want to go and fight those wars anyway. And I went back home and just kind of fell into my first IT job. And I have absolutely paid my dues. You know, I've worked from service desk all the way up, first line, second line, field engineering. And I've worked across a variety of systems. And it was about 15 years ago, I think, that I first discovered SharePoint. And I just fell in love. I know a lot of people, even now, my other half, when I talk to him about SharePoint, he's like, don't talk to me about SharePoint. I hate it.
And, that's exactly his feeling. I say that's basically avoided like the plague. I say, yeah. if you drop the O in SharePoint, now you're talking. But from the actual technology perspective, no, it's not for me.
Yeah, but I loved it because, I think, well, when a lot of people think of tech jobs, they just think of like, you know, nerdy blokes in a server room flicking switches and, you know, plugging in cables and stuff like that. But and historically, a lot of people in IT don't like talking to people across the business. And the thing that fascinated me about SharePoint was that it was this complete intersection of people and process and technology. And you get to do some quite clever things with technology, you know, with the SharePoint platform to make it do what people needed it to do. But I also loved it because I got to work across all parts of the business and understand, understand the problems that HR have that they'd want to solve, or finance, or, you know, whichever part of the business it is. And I think that really gave me an advantage when it came to later in my career, because I already understood a lot of the business problems and process, process improvement and that kind of thing. And as SharePoint kind of expanded across the M365 platform, I think that's the thing that I love for me, because it feels like you can solve those problems on an even bigger scale now.
Yeah, so one thing that comes across with the way of speaking is you're very driven and obviously love the technology that you're working with.
And obviously you're very much a consultant by nature, like your consultative nature, yeah. I think that's kind of a story that I think me and Andrew can relate to as well, kind of going through all of that and finding something that they really enjoy and going kind of, you found kind of any blockers along that way for yourself personally, or from kind of what I kind of understand from, you know, other people, I haven't kind of got it from yourself, that they seem to, they think there's a blocker in place for them to be able to go to the next stage of their career.
Not on a personal level. I have, when I was younger, I ran into blockers, which I think was related to the fact that I was young and female, and probably the only female in the room. And I originally worked in Leeds for like the first half of my career. And I was just as driven then as I am now. And I'd constantly be putting myself forward for promotions, for more responsibility. And the number of times that I was rejected or overlooked, and I do think that was a big part of it. And there were times when I was just ignored, like answering a question or helping someone, and they waited until the bloke sat next to me echoed the question before saying, "Hey, thanks, Sean, that was brilliant." that's been a problem. But I think since moving down south to London, the job market in London is just so much more competitive and a lot more open-minded as well. And it's been really rewarding, because I've found that the success that in London, things can move as fast as I can, you know, so as fast as I'm learning and gaining experience, I'm able to kind of move and develop my career at the same time. I do recognise, though, that that's probably not normal for a lot of women. You know, I talk to a lot of colleagues. I coach a lot of my friends outside work, and a lot of my colleagues as well, through things like interviews. And I think because I contracted when I was younger, I probably got a lot more experience with that whole process. And I know that a lot of it's quite common for a lot of other people to struggle with, you know, with putting themselves forward for stretch opportunities and things that maybe women are historically not as good at doing.
So it's always about confidence. It's about putting yourself out there. And that's the same if you basically want to obviously progress within your IT career or whatever field that you're based in, as well as, say, if you have like a longer term goal, like you want to become a Microsoft MVP, you have to basically put yourself in a spotlight to basically force people to obviously recognize you as a professional, first of all, and also as a trusted advisor.
Yeah, 100%. I would say that I do. So I know we'd spoken about this before this call about the fact that I'm an aspiring MVP. I wanted to go through that process. And I was actually reflecting on this and thinking that I suspect I am feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome, even though I haven't started that process yet. Because I've spent some time talking to other MVPs and understanding what that process is. And then I'm catching myself thinking, have I got enough evidence? Am I doing enough? Am I out there enough? Am I making enough of an impact or of a difference? So even though it doesn't affect me in my professional career, I do see that imposter syndrome kicking in a little bit.
And I say it took me like 3 attempts to basically to become an MVP. It's having that evidence, having that background, putting yourself out there. And say, like, for my journey to becoming a Microsoft MVP, I basically started by editing podcasts. So I used to do the UC Architects podcast, if people have ever heard of that. It's a very old podcast now. And that group was all MVPs, and I was like aspiring to be just like them. So I started basically doing that. I started doing public speaking at user groups to basically start building my own confidence up as a person, because public speaking wise, I've always been like a shy person. I've never really put myself outside of a box. So only when I basically started looking at the IT community and what I could basically do and basically expand my career, then, you know, I became more of a confident person. So once I started doing the user groups and then basically set up my own user group, I was already doing blogging, I was doing tweeting. And then basically after doing that, I then started putting myself, you know, in a spotlight even more, because I then basically went over to Amsterdam and did public speaking there. So it's like, you know, obviously back in the day, we could actually go to physical events, you know, but it's hard. It's, you know, when you're in a room full of people that are all going to be on the same level as you, they're probably going to know as much as you. It's just basically knowing that what you're delivering and you're confident in it as well.
So those
confidence.
So those virtual events have been like popping up over the past year quite a bit. And something you've done weekend before last now is the Scottish Summit. So kind of what was kind of been kind of was your how was your experience firstly with the Scottish Summit? Kind of how did you kind of get involved with that? And can you tell us about that little part of your journey?
Yeah, of course. So the Scottish Summit last year in Glasgow was I actually went to Glasgow to speak at that one, and that was the last big in-person event before we all went into lockdown. So obviously having been last year and seeing how much fun it was and how great the community aspect of it was, I was really keen to put myself forward to speak at this year's as well. And I also actually convinced a few of my colleagues to get involved. I convinced my workplace to sponsor the event. So through getting my workplace to sponsor, I was having more conversations with the organisers in the run up to it. And when they put a call out for volunteers as well, I also kind of jumped at the chance to get involved. And I think the last few weeks I've probably thought, why on earth did I put my hand up for this? Because the amount of work that goes into a virtual event is just absolutely, absolutely staggering. And the scale of what Mark and Ian did with Scottish Summit, I think, is just absolutely amazing. I think they had almost 400 sessions that went out either in the run-up to the event or on the actual Saturday itself. And they're all in the process of being uploaded to YouTube. They give a really great platform to new speakers. You know, they're really passionate about making sure they've got a good representation of female speakers as well. And it was a really, really rewarding experience, I think. I actually got a lot more out of it this year from volunteering, I think, and you know, just seeing all of the hard work that, that goes in. But I have to say, I'm looking forward to it being in person next year.
And so obviously, of them, you know, in-person events, I understand that the complexity around actually setting up a whole event, getting people on board, organising everyone, hotels, expenses, you know, it's an absolute headache and nightmare. Obviously, with a virtual event, you know, it's kind of flipped on its head, a little bit more work in the background that needs doing. Obviously, making sure people are actually attending their sessions on time. You've got then obviously the people that do the work in the background, making sure that, you know, presenters got all the everything they need. I wouldn't do it, let's put it that way. I've spoke to people in the community that run virtual events, and it's not something I'll do. A user group ain't too bad. You know, you set up a Teams call like this, send the invite out, people come along, you speak, done. Organising so many different people. I mean, I'm not too sure how many, you know, speakers were at Scottish Summit. I mean, do you know?
I think nearly 400.
Speakers?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, forget that then. I'm going to do a virtual event. Because that's too much headache. I mean, I did try looking at the actual list of speakers just to see, you know, the kind of demographic of, you know, from a diversity, equality, inclusion background. And so there is a good mix from what I could see. It's nice to see, obviously, more women doing virtual events. And I think because of COVID, and I've mentioned this to John before, I think basically because of there not being in-person events and women not basically having to be the person in the room in front of like a load of men, because generally it's males that generally attend in-person events. I think always the virtual events are giving, you know, women more confidence to basically put themselves out there, because you take away that whole, you know, that whole screen, that whole disconnect of, you know, being stuck in a room, having everyone looking at you, and if you say something incorrect, then, you know, that's that criticism as well. It's just, you know, I think a virtual event is a better way of breaking the ice, stepping into a community space, getting yourself, you know, more confident in presenting and how you deliver yourself, and then from that you can obviously then grow. Because I know obviously you said you spoke at Scottish Summit this year, last year. You've also done another event, I believe, as well.
So I've done quite a few actually. So I was at SharePoint Saturdays a couple of years ago. That was the last one in London that they did. And then I've done loads of virtual events as well, which is, like you said, it's been made easier by the fact that we're all at home. So last year I did Comsverse, I did a couple of sessions at the M365 Virtual Marathon. And I did a session at the European SharePoint Conference as well. So I was absolutely gutted when that was cancelled, because I was really looking forward to going to Amsterdam.
Yeah, it is a nice place. I mean, when I spoke at Unity Connect, which then rebranded to Office 365 Engage, they did that at the theatre, basically outside Amsterdam in Haarlem. And it's possibly one of the nicest places I've ever visited in my life. It was just such a beautiful place. And then they took out all the speakers on one of the boats down the canals and stuff. It was just a really nice event. And again, if I look back now and look at the number of female speakers there, I can't actually remember any.
Back to the Scottish Summit quickly. What was the topic that you covered?
So I did a session on creating a more inclusive workplace. So it was a quick overview of tips and tricks on some of the accessibility features in M365, how to create content that's more inclusive, how to run more inclusive team meetings, and then how to use Teams for social connections as well. So making sure that, you know, that people still have a way to actually feel a bit more connected to their employees, even though we're all at home.
Yeah, and you can, and I'm guessing right now you can watch that back now on the Scottish Summit's YouTube as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyone who hasn't seen it, yeah, go back, have a and look at any kind of session, the session that Zoe's delivered there.
We'll find the session stick in the show notes, so obviously you can go straight to it and check it out.
Cool. So what got you kind of starting to work within the community? Kind of what made you, you see a lot of good professionals at the moment, many different companies, loads of different partners at my and stuff. What made you kind of want to go, this is my day job, I want to start doing more outside into the community? What's driving you to be more in the community?
So I'm very much community driven anyway. And when I was younger, I was really into music. I was really into kind of the music community. So, you know, I like the feeling of community and the connections that you can build. And I first went to SharePoint Saturday. I can't even remember what year it was now, maybe like 2015, 2016. And I absolutely loved it. And I learned so much and had so much fun. And I just thought, you know, I'd absolutely love to be in a position where I'm sharing with the people as well. And I think that's the thing for me. It's, you know, my career, whilst I've always been interested in computing, it's always been self-taught. You know, I've been heavily reliant on people's blogs, people's videos, and the fact that other people are so willing to share. And that's it for me. It's, you know, it's about the kind of the community and the people and giving back and helping other people either learn how to do cool things or solve problems or just try and get people excited and think, hey, I could go and do that.
And how does that kind of change your day, your working day? I'm guessing your working day, like most people with 9 to 5, kind of how does that kind of what more do you kind of have to give outside of that to do the community work?
I don't know. I don't think my job's 9-5, to be honest. I feel like, and this isn't a reflection on my company. I think it's a reflection on me. But you know, the Microsoft 365 platform changes so much. There's new stuff coming out all of the time, and I get so excited about the new features and the art of the possible with it. And there's me and a few colleagues and some friends, and we're literally, you know, all hours of the day and the evening, we're pinging new links, like, have you seen this new thing coming out? So it's just a natural extension of that for me, really. You know, it's just kind of taking that passion and making it a little bit more focused. Yeah. I don't think that's what you have to be like to succeed, though. I think, you know, I think if you want to get involved in the community, you just get started, you know, and you don't need to worry that it's going to suck all of your time away or anything like that.
It's a good line thing. I think it's great. It's a great position to be in, because obviously you love your job and you don't have to go across. You don't have to kind of step out of your personal life as such to then go into work. It kind of infuses, and when it infuses like that and you enjoy it so much, it's a great position to be in. I think me and Andrew are quite in a similar position in that to yourself. So kind of outside of this, kind of who inspires you in the community?
I'm looking at who I wrote down for this, putting me on the spot. I mean, there's tons of really great people out there. Joanne Klein, you know, so I love some of the stuff that she does from a compliance perspective, and particularly all the new Syntex and Viva Topic stuff that she's sharing at the moment. Laura Graham Brown, Power BI stuff's brilliant. Mareth, there's quite a few like Norwegian MVPs, Norwegian, like that kind of area, who are absolutely brilliant. I think there's a really, really cool change in adoption user group that a few of them have set up recently, which is great. And then people like Matt Weird, I mean, you know, he's consistently produced brilliant content. John Levesque, you know, I love, I mean, he's another one, I think, who you can tell he's just so authentic in his content, and, you know, he's just blended his kind of personal passions with his work really well. But there's too many to mention. There's so many great people out there. And, you know, a really good way to just uncover some of these is to, you know, to go and follow some of the bigger names on Twitter and then look at who they follow and who they interact with and just kind of, you know, build out your network from there, really.
Yeah. And I say, like, you know, there is a lot of good people out in the community that do work, just to say, even in the UK as well. You know, it's just basically getting out there and obviously speaking to these people. I know another guy you mentioned, Al, in the notes that he basically sent to us. He actually came and spoke to me when I was running the Microsoft Cloud User Group in London. And I think I actually was one of the first people who gave him his first slot at speaking. And it's great to see what he's now basically gone on and done after that as well. He's basically now an MVP himself in his own right. He's got his own podcast. He's been speaking at, I think he did Ignite the Tour as well. So, you know, it's just getting that opportunity. I mean, what would you advise to someone from the women's tech community to basically do? How would they basically get involved? How are they? Who do they need to speak to? What kind of events will they need to look at?
So I think a really great way to start is user groups. It tends to be a smaller audience, a bit more informal, and a really easy way just to get in. But I think if people are nervous, it can really help finding, maybe not like someone who's got the official title of mentor, you know, but finding someone who can give them a little bit of guidance and take them under their wing. Everybody in the community is so friendly. And I think this is, again, this is one of the things that I love. You know, everybody's got time to help each other and advise each other. And I often see people on Twitter, you know, amplifying content that's new from people who are just starting out. So and if any, you know, if anybody does want any help or guidance, get in touch with me as well. I'm more than happy to help.
Awesome.
That's good to know. So, you know, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn.
I might drop you a message myself.
But so it is just basically, you know, people being open and honest and just basically being there to help, because, you know, it is a large commitment getting into the IT community, especially if you're, you know, inspired to be an MVP. So you've now obviously seen that for yourself. That form you have to fill out is an absolute nightmare. There's no easy way of doing it, and putting the right content in there as well, it's hard work. You have to do the right stuff to be recognized. And I say, when in episode one I mentioned, there is no set route of becoming an MVP. Everyone's basically from all different backgrounds, all walks of life. They've done basically writing books, they do blog posts, you know, public speaking. There's so many entrance paths to becoming MVP. It's just whatever works for you, and basically then how you can basically build on that. So then you become a recognized person within that particular space in the community. And hopefully, as you know, this podcast goes on, speaking to other guests, or, you know, I've got a number of Microsoft MVPs. I'm currently trying to reach out to, you know, MVP leads within Microsoft themselves. To basically come on and speak, and they can obviously talk about, you know, what they see from submissions wise to obviously help, you know, anyone listening to this call, how they can basically, you know, start that track. I mean, what I will say, don't basically set become an MVP as the be all and end all. What it should be, it's all about, you know, love of the community, love of basically sharing. If you're basically going out there to, you know, I want to be an MVP, you're probably going to fail. But going out there with the passion, the drive to basically share your knowledge, experience, you'll be very successful. And so I know MVPs that have been in the program nearly 20 years because they just love Microsoft, they love technology, and they just basically love sharing. So probably getting close towards the end of the show.
Just one more thing I kind of wanted, sorry, if that's okay. Just one thing we've touched upon kind of like the beginning, we've gone through to the middle, we've kind of touched on the future, but what's like the next... What's kind of your goal in the future? What's your main future goal in your career?
Yeah, so it's probably a few years away yet, but I do want to get to sea level. For where I'm working at the moment and the last place I worked, you know, I built out really quickly, built out high performing teams. I've learned a lot about running a business, even if that's a business unit within a wider organization. And one of the key goals for me, alongside the community stuff that will continue to grow, is making sure that I learn everything else that I need to do to get to that C level, so CTO, CIO type role. You know, on the way, I'm hoping that by continuing to be loud and visible, I can continue to show some of the younger girls coming into IT that they can actually, you know, reach the top and have hopefully if I get there, and have a really interesting and exciting career as well.
And so there's probably no reason why you can't, from everything that, you know, we spoke about today. You know, you do come across with a lot of drive, a lot of passion. You know, you're basically putting yourself out there in the right way. You know, you want to be involved. So, you know, hats off to you. Exactly, you know, one of the people we want to talk to. And I say there's loads of women in the community that require that probably that additional help or that spotlight, just basically to share their story, just to inspire others. Because, you know, the more you basically put yourself out there and tell your story, the more people that basically will be following you in that long line. And that's obviously, you know, from a personal perspective, it's good to look back on and go, look, I've helped X amount of people get into the market space, and now I've now, because I've helped them, I can see them doing so well and progressing, and that, you know, that gives you like a warm feeling inside.
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. So I think that's when I'll wrap it up there. So sorry, thank you very much for attending this episode today. It's been very informative. Hopefully it inspires others that basically listen to this podcast. This episode will be released on the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day, which is a great day to release the podcast. So, Zoe, thank you very much for coming today.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thanks both for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you, Zoe. Thank you for joining the podcast.
And John, thanks for being my co-host again today. And again, we'll see you on the next episode, which is episode 3. And hopefully we'll have another female speaker from the Women Tech community. And yeah, thank you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Please make sure you hit that like, share and subscribe button to help us promote our message. You can also follow us on Twitter at MSFT Spotlight, and we're also on LinkedIn, the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. And finally, we'd like to tell you a little bit about BitTitan and thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Remote migrations start here. Let MigrationWiz do the work for you. It's fast, secure, and 100% SaaS, which means you can migrate at any time and from anywhere. Migrate mailboxes, documents, public folders, personal archives, or even Microsoft Teams with just a few clicks. No special training needed, and no customer downtime. When the work matters, choose MigrationWiz.